This is an iHeart podcast.
On the Jordan Harbinger Show, you'll hear amazing stories from people that have lived them, from spies to CEOs, even an undercover agent who infiltrated the Gambino crime family. You're about to hear a preview of the Jordan Harbinger Show with Jack Garcia, who did just that.
My career was 24 out of 26 years was solely dedicated working undercover. Now I walk in, I'm in the bar. Now there's a barmaid there, good looking young lady. She's serving me a drink. Hey, what would you like? My drink was, give me a Kettle One martini, three olives, glass of water on the side. I finish the drink. The guys come in. I'm going to go in my pocket, take out the big wad of money. Bam, I give her $100. If you're with the mob, I say, hey, Jordan, you're on record with us. That means we protect you. Nobody could shake you down. We could shake you down, but you're on record with us.
For more on how Jack became so trusted in the highest levels of the Gambino organization, check out episode 392 of The Jordan Harbinger Show.
This is The Jesse Kelly Show.
It is Monday. Let us begin with a happy story today. A story of joy. See, we're going to talk about you for a moment. And I want to put you in a hypothetical situation here. So just kick back, close your eyes, think about this. It's party time for you. We're going to sit you at the head of the table, and we are going to throw a massive, massive party for you. And this is going to take you some time, so I need you to brew on this. We are going to invite and obligate them to attend every single person you know. Friends, family, coworkers. There's no excuses. There's no little Johnny got sick tonight. Every single one of them are coming to this party. You thinking about them? All of them. Wife, kids, cousins, uncles. That lady you had your eye on. They're all there. How many are at that table? Everybody you know. Now, some people, that table is going to vary in size, but I want you to picture this. The table was one of those big, long, rectangular banquet tables. You are seated at the head of it, and you're looking down all the people you know. Bunch of them on one side of the table, bunch on the other side of the table. How long is that table? How many faces do you see there? How many people do you know? And you're sitting there looking at everyone, thinking about your life and all the people you know, and the left side of the table, all of them, every face, dies. On the spot. That's not some hypothetical that nobody's ever experienced before. That gave you a tiny, tiny preview of the Black Death. You see, we think we know carnage, suffering, pain, and maybe you do to some extent, don't we all, I suppose, at some level. But you don't know, and I don't know, the apocalypse. The closest you've ever come to experiencing that kind of loss is watching Thanos snap his fingers in the Avengers movie and having half the Earth disappear. Because that wasn't a hypothetical during the Black Death. Half of the people you knew died. Half of Europe. Half. More than half of entire cities, the major city, more than half, 60, 70% are the estimates of a city gone. That was the Black Death. It's the bubonic plague and actually a couple other kind of plagues combined. And it was in an era, this is the 1300s. In fact, there were several outbreaks for a couple centuries after this. London had a big one in the 1600s that wiped out a third of its population. But anyway, the 1300s, and you really could not create a better scenario for a deadly virus or deadly bacteria to wipe out that many people. You see, everybody was crowded in together. People did not understand things like microbiology. And they didn't understand how things spread and where things spread. And understand this, because we don't talk about this enough. The specifics of the Black Plague are this. Mainly it was carried by fleas. Now, again, when I said there's more than one kind of plague, there was. A lot of people died of this kind of plague. Another died of the airborne kind, where it got in your lungs, you cough, someone breathes it in, they die too. But this one was mainly carried by fleas. Fleas that traveled on animals. Obviously, you've heard about rats. It was mainly black rats. There are several different kinds of rats, but black rats, of course, are the kind of rats that prefer to live around humans. They feed off the things humans feed off of. Well, the rats die of the plague too, and the fleas, they don't. But in order to get you really grossed out first thing on a Monday morning, the fleas, it's not just them biting you that gives you the plague. It's them vomiting in you that gives you the plague. Plague grows inside of them. They vomit it back out. You get sick. Now, the reason they call it the Black Plague was this. Once you get bitten, your lymph nodes in your body, as they do today with any kind of infection like that, will try to fight it. You have lymph nodes in your armpits. You have lymph nodes in your neck. You have lymph nodes in your groin. Once you get the Black Plague, that was the sign. A swollen, extremely painful lymph node in your neck, armpits, or groin area. 80% death rate. 80%. They didn't know what it was. They didn't know how to attack it. This was an extremely religious time. And when I say religious, I don't mean, you know, just, oh, he's got a really close relationship with God. I mean, there was the Pope and there was the clergy and this was the hierarchy and bad things only happen to bad people. And I guess we just haven't prayed enough. And it was that kind of time. Again, not a time where they understood bacteria. So some cities, they killed all the cats and dogs thinking that would help them stop the plague. They thought the fleas were infecting the animals, which may have been true to some extent. But remember what the fleas were mainly infecting? Do you remember the rats? What's the best way to get rid of rats? Any farmer will tell you. Cats. If you have a rat problem, what you want are cats. And if you go around and kill all the cats, you've officially taken away the only predator a city-dwelling rat even has. And so they multiply more and multiply more. I forget the name of the Pope right now. I actually told this story one time, but one Pope virtually doomed his area of authority because he viewed black cats, this is before the plague came down, he viewed black cats and all cats really as being the spawn of Satan and ordered them all killed, actually offered a bounty for them. And the rats came with the plague and there was nothing to kill the rats. Then, I guess as in now, disease, plagues like this were felt by the poor. Yes, plenty of rich people died of the Black Plague. No question. But what would you do if you were super wealthy and you had a horrible outbreak in the city where you lived. And this was, again, not only to the cities, it spread other places, but the cities were the ones where you'd have 60, 70% of the place gone. And what would you do if you're rich? Well, same thing I would do, right? Honey, pack up the kids. It's time to head to the lake house for the summer. I'm not faulting them for it. Good for you. The poor people don't have that luxury. The poor people are stuck in the dirt, in the squalor. And oh, dirt. I forgot to mention about the dirt. You see, we picture streets a certain way. Hang on, I'll tell you how we should be picturing streets.
Jesse Kelly. You're listening to The Jesse Kelly Show.
When we picture streets, when we talk about streets back in the day, cities back in the day, London, you know, Paris, we all picture the same thing because that's our, it's our nature. It's our experience. We picture, I mean, pavement, concrete. Even if we don't picture that, maybe a lovely cobblestone as somebody rides a carriage down it. Streets were basically the grossest thing you've ever seen in your entire life back in the day. You see, this is an era before automobiles. And it wasn't a little oil and antifreeze in the streets. The streets were filled and I basically made up of poop. Lots of it. Human poop that got thrown out. Metric tons of horse poop that people used to go to and fro. Dog poop, cat poop, rat poop. Your street was not a lovely dirt street. It was not a lovely paved street. Streets were supposed to be the rankest smelling, foulest thing ever. And of course they would be, right? Puts into context those old westerns you used to watch, doesn't it? Where John Wayne falls down in a muddy street. That wasn't mud where he fell down. And they didn't know what to do. You would think the world was coming to an end. You know, multiple times they would sail out to a ship that looked like it wasn't doing anything. And they would board the ship and find a ghost ship with every single person on board dead from the Black Plague, just sailing in the ocean. Would that not be something creepy? Children, I just read a story this morning. You see, they nailed you in your home lots of the time. I come home tonight. It's the 13th century. I'm feeling the neck there. Looks like I got a swollen lymph node. I think I got the plague. Somebody pops by, says, oh, man, he's got the plague. Do you know the next sound I would hear? This is a reality. The next sound I would hear would be the town blacksmith putting a padlock on my front door and the police stationing somebody out front. So nobody, not wife, not kids, nobody is allowed to leave my home. And when you're dealing with a disease that spreads like that, they're all going to die. As one person put it from that era, infection may have killed its thousands, but shutting up its 10,000s. You see, the rich packed up in their carriages and rode off to the country homes. The poor got locked inside their homes to die. Even the clergy left. You see, this is not like today where, for the most part, pastors were not some rich celebrity types. See, back then they were. Pastors were the rich celebrity types. Today, that's not the case. I mean, again, for the most part. They packed up and left with the other rich people. They were emphatic about how you were buried back then. We still care about it today, but nothing, nothing like back then. Being buried was a sacred thing. But it's part of how you got to heaven. It was part of your tradition. It was part of this. And so many people died, they stopped caring. And there was no one to bury them. And they would just dig massive trenches by the churches and shovel all the bodies into it and throw a layer of dirt on top of it to get ready for the next morning where they had to shovel more bodies on top of it. They estimate worldwide, 100 million. They estimate the worldwide population, not even making this up, dropped by 25% during the Black Plague. Again, the worst, by a mile, the worst disaster ever visited on the face of the planet, if you don't count God's flood that killed everyone but Noah and the fam. Everybody. Remember, half your table, the left side's gone. Everybody. On top of the tearing apart of the social fabric, you see so many people died. You know how we get on the news every day today and we see Donald Trump at the press conference and then the governor will get up and say something that afternoon and, oh, hey, the mayor's doing a little state of the city thing. So many people died. They couldn't replace the politicians fast enough, and some places just went without government because they all died. Everyone dead. Oh, did I mention? Anti-Semitism came along with it. You see, a society will tear itself apart in horrible ways when something like this comes down. They blame the Jews for this. Now, there's a long history to this. Part of this was Catholicism was big back then. You think it's big now, it was big back then. Part of this era's Catholicism barred Catholics from handling money. They viewed it as basically a sin, which is why you get the stereotype Jewish banker thing, you know, Jews control all the money, because Jews obviously stepped up and was like, well, somebody needs to run a freaking bank here. And if you've been told your whole life that handling money is sinful, and everywhere you look, there's a Jew running a bank, what are you going to think? Plus, you people killed Jesus, Chris. Quit. Anyway. So they would, Strasbourg, Germany, for instance, they just rounded up, right after the Black Plague, they just rounded up 2,000 Jews and tortured them all until they admitted to poisoning the wells with Black Plague, and then they burned them at the stake. Yes, it's not a lesson in anti-Semitism today. It's just that's what happens. That's what we do. But believe it or not, this is not really a Black Plague story. Do you know how all this began? How it really began? The wiping out of Europe? With an argument. Just a little argument between a couple of bros. A little religious argument. Let us backtrack just a little bit to the Mongols. Remember, I've told you about the Mongols before. Genghis Khan and the greatest kingdom ever, the greatest conqueror ever. Fast forward about 100 years after Genghis Khan is done slaughtering everybody on Earth, the Mongol Empire is broken up into differing empires. Now, you should know, no, it is nowhere near the glory of the Genghis Khan reign as far as power goes. However, the broken up pieces of the Mongol era, still really, really powerful. And I mean really powerful. One of, if not maybe the most powerful portion of it, was called the Golden Horde. I know it's a sweet name, I just wanted to say it. That made up the northwestern portion of what was once Genghis Khan's entire empire. Now, remember, Genghis Khan was actually, for all the millions he slaughtered, extremely religiously tolerant? That didn't necessarily carry over with all of the broken-up Mongol empires. The Golden Horde was a Muslim empire, for the most part. Not super anti-Christian, but a little. Not super anti-Jew, but a little. It was a Muslim empire. You see, Up in the city of Kaffa, or close to the city of Kaffa, the Mongols had these Italian tradesmen. The tradesmen were from Genoa. And they told the tradesmen, look, I understand you're Christians, it's all good, but you do no trade, and you're right here on the Black Sea. You can get a map and see the Black Sea. It's a major, major trading hub. You see, your city's right here on the Black Sea, so here's what we're going to do. You're really good at trade. You handle all the trade here on the Black Sea. Obviously, you're going to pay us a little money off the top, and everybody will win. You get rich, we get rich, everybody wins, right? And for a while, everybody was winning. The Golden Horde was reeling it in. Until that argument. Hang on. Close to the port city of Kaffa back in 1343, although the city was there the whole time, is a tiny city called Tanna, tiny little town. And in this town, some of those merchants, those tradesmen who were running the ports of Kaffa, making a fortune for themselves and the Mongols, they got in an argument with a Muslim dude. No one knows the circumstances, how it happened, but the Muslim dude ended up dead. Not the end of the world. And if you're wondering how this is going to tie in with the Black Plague, well, you're just going to have to be patient for a second. You see, those merchants then knew they were in quite a bit of trouble. One, a Muslim dude was dead and the Golden Horde was Muslim. Two, as you may remember from previous shows, the Mongols did not play around with the law. These are people who would slaughter their own men happily for disobeying even slightly. They took off, the merchants did, and they ran to the big city of Kaffa and said, hey, can you protect us? I'm sure the Muslims are, I'm sure the Mongols are coming to kill us. And the city of Kaffa, for better or for worse, said, sure, come on in, screw them. Generally, if you know your history at all, not a great decision. So, here's the deal. The Mongols sent an army, and they knocked on the door of the city and said, go ahead, sell those guys out because we need to kill them. And the city said, no, I don't think we will. And the Mongols, well, said, okay, then you're under attack. And the Mongols laid siege to the city and they lost. Like I said, this is not the Genghis Khan era. They were very powerful, but they were not all powerful. They actually lost about 15,000 men. Finally gave up, took off, said, all right, we're done. Only, I mean, they're still Mongols. So they're still mad. And they gathered up another army and came back and laid siege again. And this time it's not going very well again. Only it's not going very well for a very different reason. You see, the plague was tearing through China at the time, was tearing through the Asian steppe at the time. And unbeknownst to them, the Mongols brought it to the Black Sea. And when the Mongols brought it to the Black Sea and they were laying siege to the city of Kaffa, their men started dying. A lot of them. And this was not going well. And let's be honest, they're still Mongols. These are not people who obey the rules of warfare. These are not people who lose lying down. So they stopped throwing rocks and trees with their catapults into the city, trying to knock down the walls, trying to knock down the buildings. Instead, they loaded up each and every person who had died of plague onto a catapult and began launching them over the city walls into Kaffa. Now, try to picture this moment as best you can. I don't mean one or two people. I mean for a month, all day, every day. If you look up in the sky, you can see a dead, smelly, rotting corpse hurling over your city walls to splatter on your streets and buildings and spread plague all over the place. Mongols gave it up again because their army was dying, packed it up, went home. The problem is, people in Kaffa, they didn't. They packed it up and hopped onto ships. And the rats that had the fleas with the plague hopped onto the ships, and people with the plague hopped onto the ships, and they sailed everywhere. But really, the main problem is they sailed to the city of Constantinople. Now, that doesn't mean anything to you, but know this. If you could roll Los Angeles, New York City, Hong Kong, Shanghai, London, all up into one, it still wouldn't be as big of a deal as Constantinople was back in the day. It was the trading hub of the planet, and as soon as that place gets the plague, everywhere gets the plague. And those Italians sailing from Kaffa into Constantinople, unbeknownst to them, brought about the death of half of Europe. Half of Europe. These things, the terrible things that happen in history, especially diseases, they almost always start the same way. Slightly different circumstances, but they almost always start the same way, and they almost always play out the same way. Something small happens. Someone gets sick. But someone who's sick doesn't realize what they have. The, quote, experts and doctors of the time don't realize exactly what they have or how they have it. So what do? Without enough information, they panic. They make decisions. Decisions that inevitably doom other people. Quick, there's a black plague out. It's super infectious. Everybody, get inside and lock your doors. Wait, what? Does that sound familiar at all? We have an infectious disease right now. We know this from things like the Spanish flu, and surprise, surprise, God did it right. Fresh air and sunshine are excellent for people who are sick. I know you're going to find that shocking. So what do? Everyone get inside. Go ahead and let me catch you on the beach. You'll be placed under arrest. I'll tell you what we're doing. We're closing down the state parks and walking trails. I have video today of, I believe it's Venice Beach, them taking this gigantic skate park. It's one of those big concrete areas where skateboarders go and ramps and things like that. You know, outdoors, sunshine, fresh air, exercise. They filled it up with sand so the skateboarders couldn't skate anymore. And on top of the panic and the terrible decisions made by the experts that make everything worse. You remember the killing of the cats as well? Well, they make everybody less healthy. Get inside. Order takeout. Watch Netflix. The gyms are closed. Do you know what they ordered the people to do during the plague? They ordered them to smoke. I'm not making that up. They viewed bad air as being the cause of the Black Plague. And I don't mean, you know, the infectious part that comes out of somebody's lungs. They actually viewed some air that came out of the earth as being bad. And so they wanted to cover that up. And they thought smoking would actually help. And when I say they wanted you to smoke, I don't mean they said, hey, you might want to think about smoking. I mean they ordered children to smoke. Here, smoke this. And the children who refused were beaten. When I say they, I don't I don't just mean anybody. That was the experts. That was the physicians. Those were the learned men of the day. Just do what you're told, peasant. You can't even read. Trust me, I'm a doctor. Oh, remember what I told you about the rich people? Packed up and left? Yeah, hang on, I've got something on that.
The Jesse Kelly Show.
Remember the rich people who packed up and left town during the Black Plague? Good luck, poors. You're on your own. This is a tweet from Patton Oswalt, famous comedian, actor. I'm not exaggerating here. This is what he tweeted. This is verbatim. I won't fluff it up. Quote, Anne Frank spent 2 years hiding in an attic, and we've been home for just over a month with Netflix, food delivery, and video games, and there are people risking viral death by storming state capitol buildings and screaming, open Fuddruckers. They don't understand the separation, and people don't understand how you live. And let me reinforce this again. I've been disgusted by politicians and people still getting a paycheck throughout this process, scolding working people about wanting to get back to work, telling them to shut up, go home. That's so easy to say. But the thing is, I don't begrudge them the money. I'm not that guy. Get rich. Get famous. Do it. I'm rooting for you. I'm rooting for Patton Oswalt. I don't want him poor and destitute. I want him out there making it. I hope the next 10 people that make it, I hope you make it. It's not that. What bothers me is when you get to that point and one, you all of a sudden feel like you're better than normal people. And two, you don't even bother trying to put yourself in the shoes of someone else. We're all home with Netflix and food delivery and video games. You remember that food I told you about I ordered on Friday night for a date night with my wife? We had a little date night in the house. We made the kids wait tables and stuff like that. By the way, it turned out awesome, Chris. Turned out absolutely awesome. I'll get to that in a second. It cost $58. Now, I realize $58 is nothing to Patton Oswalt, but I'm not doing that every night. Are you doing that every night? And even if you are, again, I don't begrudge it to you. That's fine. Do it. Deliver it up. The restaurants need the business. If you can afford to do it and love it, do it. I've always said, if I ever get mega rich, I'm not a big material guy. It makes me sound really, really, really righteous, Chris. I'm not a materialistic person. No, I'm the worst person on earth. I just don't value boats and jet skis and fancy cars. I wouldn't sell my house or my pickup. That's not who I am. But I would eat out like every single meal. I love eating out. I just can't afford it, so I don't. So if you can, that's fine. But again, understand something. Other people are waiting in line for hours at the local food bank to get emergency food. This disconnect, it doesn't work. Know what you don't know. And you heard, we had a guest on the other day. You heard her talk about this disconnect. And here's the deal. The journalists go through it too. The truth of the matter is this, because journalism doesn't pay a lot, especially right out of college, The people who go into journalism are not just the people who want to be journalists. It's the people who can afford, meaning their families can afford to have them go into journalism. If you grew up poor, you don't have the option to go be a freaking journalist. When you go to college, if you even get to go to college, brother, when you graduate, I got to make some money. If I don't make money, I don't eat. So what you have in the journalism field is a bunch of, you know, let's be honest, it's like 60-65% upper middle class white kids. So they don't understand working people, which again is fine if that was your life. If your whole life was, you know, fancy cars at 16 and sipping mimosas, that's fine. But understand that you don't understand how working people actually live. You don't understand. And I'm not saying open up everything tomorrow and everyone will go back to work. That's absurd. Of course they won't. A lot of people will stay home like they did during the Spanish flu. When we didn't shut down the entire economy, we hurt the economy because of the flu, but we gave people the freedom to make that choice. And these huge factories would open up. Half the people would stay home, too scared, but half would go to work. Why? Well, it's my job to provide for my family. If we can't eat, I am going to risk the virus to go to work. My family has to eat. We have to stay alive. So again, I'm happy, totally happy for people who succeed, even people I don't like. I'm not that guy. I'm filthy rich people. I'm not that guy. Maybe I'll be one day. It's not my overarching life goal, but it's fine. I'm not that guy. But if you are in that situation, especially during times like this, and you've thrown the family in the carriage to head to the lake house while these poors deal with the plague, that's fine. Good for you. I do the same thing for my family. But at least know that you don't then get to, from your lake house, send memos out scolding everyone else how they should be happy with how they're living right now. Stop this "we're all in this together" crap. We're not. We all have very, very, very different situations right now. All right, I'll tell you about that date night, Chris, and I'll tell you about this sweet new show I found. Hang on.
You don't have to dip forever. You know that, right? You don't have to smoke forever. And the reason I say it like that is I have been that guy. I've been that guy. I dipped for so long. And what would happen is I would decide I'm going to quit. It's bad for me. I'm going to quit. I'm a man. I don't need any help. I'm just going to quit cold turkey. And I would fail time and time and time again. I tried things like the patch. That didn't work. Gum, sunflower seeds. I tried it all. It's just a matter of finding the right thing to help you quit. That's Jake's Mint Chew. Go, put in your dip. Just make sure it's Jake's Mint Chew. It's tobacco-free. It's nicotine-free. It's even sugar-free. And I highly recommend, just a personal choice, I highly recommend their CBD pouches because it really helps take that extra edge off. Go to jakesmintchew.com. That's jakesmintchew.com. Make sure you use the promo code Jesse at checkout. When you do that, you get 10% off.
This is an iHeart podcast.